And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Lori Houston. And this is the second portion of our evening where we talk with a author. And this is a very timely one since we've been talking about January and New Year's resolutions. So I'm very honored to have Heather Caruso, who is the author of Your Drug-Free Guide to Digestive Health. And so we are going to talk about digestion. We're going to talk about New Year's resolutions. We're going to talk about weight loss a little bit because that's her new book coming up. So welcome, Heather.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your story and your journey as to how you got involved with homeopathy and how you got involved with writing this book and, you know, where you are on your journey.
Well, I originally actually became interested in homeopathy, natural health, and diet after I had my first son, who's 14 going on 15 now. He was a breech baby, and he had nerve damage from the delivery. And the doctors had told me that he would have one arm smaller than the other and that he wouldn't have function of the arm because of the damage. So I didn't really like that, as most mothers wouldn't. And I took him to someone who gave him simple little pellets called Arnica. And after one short month, they couldn't tell which arm was the one that was affected when we went to sick kids.
Wow.
And they kept trying to do physio on the wrong arm. So that got me interested. And I had a few other experiences where I was a bit frustrated with not getting the answers I wanted from the medical community with prevention and why do certain things happen with regards to other family members. And I thought this is really something that I wanted to look into, how to prevent things from happening, how diet affects people. So ever since that time, I've always been interested in diet and cutting-edge research on natural medicine and homeopathy, and I found it's really worked for me and for my clients.
And it's quite an extensive book that you've put out. It's quite an extensive course to get into homeopathy. And, I mean, it is your passion, you can tell.
Yeah. It. I found in my practice that almost a quarter of all people that came to me had some form of digestive disorder.
Okay.
And they were on lots of medications. And it was funny to me because I thought, you don't have to be taking all these drugs for this condition. It's simple. And a lot of people, when they made these changes, they really felt better. And what I found was that a lot of people who couldn't, you know, get to me for whatever reasons, financial or whatever, I decided I want to put this in a book for people so that they can solve their own problems, follow a healthy diet. They can look up their ailments A to Z to do with their digestion, get some suggestions and go from there. So it's a really good baseline for people to check out the book.
Right. And they do suggest that, you know, a lot of our problems do come from our digestion, because although it's not necessarily the food that we eat, but it is our fuel through our food. And if we're not digesting, which from pollutants, from allergies, from food sensitivities versus allergies, since there seems to be a bit of a difference.
Yeah.
You know, we don't tend to be digesting our food well.
Right. And in addition to that, I think a lot of people don't know that 60 to 80% of your immune system is actually found in your gastrointestinal tract. So if you don't have a healthy gut, if you don't have a healthy gut flora, your immune system is weak. You're not absorbing the nutrients you need from your food. And it sets the stage up for further diseases down the road. You know, if you don't go to the bathroom enough, toxins sit in your intestinal tract and ferment. It causes other hosts of problems. So a lot of people don't pay attention to it. Some people might think, oh, it's normal for me that I only go to the bathroom once a week, but it's really not normal. Maybe they're used to it, but they should really consider doing something about it. So a lot of people don't realize the impact of what their digestion does for them and also what foods they put in their mouth, how it affects them down the road.
Right. And a lot of I mean, there are a lot of autoimmune diseases right now that, you know, that are coming to the awareness and coming to the forefront due to, I guess, a lot of these issues. And, you know, I think it's probably really important that we start looking at this. Now, I'm a person who considerably feels quite healthy and is quite energetic, and I didn't actually believe I had a digestive problem. Mm-hmm. Now, this year has been probably one of the most stressful years I've encountered, but I do a lot of things to balance that, which is meditation, and I do, you know, a 6 to 8 kilometer walk every day. And so I'm doing a lot of things to balance that. But just recently I went to a homeopath and discovered through some tests that I actually have candida. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's quite as bad as she was initially saying. but I think that might've been her bedside manner. Yeah. And, but you know, it is something that now I'm now aware of, that I'm now looking at. And, you know, it's a pretty restricted diet to be on. And I mean, it's very interesting. I mean, how does something like that, I know that, you know, since then I've sort of talked with a few of my spiritual friends and they said, well, maybe it's, you know, you're not digesting the injustices of this world very well. Mm-hmm. So taking it into a more deeper spiritual perspective versus, you know, necessarily, because I don't have concerns. I don't, you know, I do go regularly. I do, you know,
I don't have any symptoms.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what tests are performed to really ascertain if it's candida and at what level. But some things that might make you feel better is that everyone naturally has candida in our body.
Right.
It's an opportunistic type of a bacteria or a fungal form, and it will take off if it's given the right condition. So everybody does have candida, and from time to time it will overgrow if it's given the right conditions. Certain medications can make it overgrow, and certain lifestyle, it sounds like you have a very healthy lifestyle, things in diet, like over the Christmas season, if you drink more wine.
I think it was all the sugar.
Yeah, it could be sugar, could be mold, all the good stuff, more like cheeses, wines. And in my practice, if I do some stool cultures with people, send them away, and they'll actually, like most people have yeast come up, and some people have it quite overgrown, and some just moderately overgrown, but it's very common.
Right.
And you don't always have symptoms, and it's just like something to tell you, just watch it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find the diet is very restrictive, and a lot of people find it hard to comply with. But it's just a sign for you to watch, you know, watch it. This can take off. And it does cause other problems, but most people that are tested that come in, maybe half of the people, they have it as well. So it's pretty common.
Mm-hmm.
And it's common in men, too. A lot of men don't think that they would ever get candida. They only think of it as like a yeast infection that women suffer from. But it's everywhere. It's in our sinus. It's in our, can be in our lungs, on our skin. It's in our stomach and intestinal tract. So it's everywhere. So it's with us, too. It will overgrow if it's given the right condition.
Right.
But you're not alone.
Yes, no.
Yeah. Not alone on the sweets either.
Especially over Christmas. Oh, my God. Why did they do that?
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm one of those people that, you know, if it's in my house, so this is why I'm usually very good at, you know, keeping my home, you know, pretty clear of certain things.
Yeah.
That, you know, if it's in my home, I have to eat it. It's like it calls to me.
Yeah.
So let's talk about food cravings.
Food cravings. Well, I have a section in my book on fruit, mm-hmm. food cravings. And I actually have quite a lot about that in my new book on weight loss that's coming out soon. But food cravings can be a sign of something. Actually, they can be a sign of candida, too.
Right.
But a lot of people crave chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And for example, like if you're shy in magnesium, which is a mineral, you'll crave chocolate more so. But chocolate has certain feel-good properties that are beneficial to us. And they say that dark chocolate, if you can get the highest percentage of dark chocolate, is actually It's good for us. It has a lot of antioxidants. It's just the quantity that a lot of us would eat if we were left to our own devices.
Well, I don't know. The really, 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 you know, high-end dark chocolate where you can get up, what, 95% now? You don't want to eat that much of that.
No. It's slightly bitter.
It's slightly.
But, you know, I've never met a chocolate myself that I didn't like, so I try not to keep it in the house.
Yeah.
It's one of those things. But actually, even candida makes you crave for starchy carbohydrates, refined carbs and sugars and wine and moldy
right.
things like cheese as well.
Right.
So sometimes if you do have a bit more candida, you'll crave for that kind of stuff that's not good for you.
Mm-hmm. So when you think of cheese, it would be like an older cheddar or something?
Actually, all cheese is
really
somewhat moldy, and
right.
of course blue cheese is probably the worst.
Right.
But if people also don't sleep well, they've shown that just 2 or 3 nights of sleep deprivation in college students caused them to eat as if they were going for diabetes, you know, the full-on sugars and refined carbs, and even their blood sugar levels switched after a few days of missing sleep. So people who don't sleep well tend to have a real problem with food cravings and that sort of thing as well.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
So what is the recommendation then for food cravings?
For food cravings, depending on what you're craving, the chocolate thing, you know, you can try the magnesium, but it is a feel-good kind of substance. So sometimes people that crave certain things are looking for things outside themselves for nurturing, or what they call mother love.
Right, the emotional nurturing.
Yeah, a lot of times it is very emotional. And people eat for comfort. People eat during times of stress. So sometimes even just journaling, you know, what's going on in your life so you can identify it, it can give you ideas as to how you can brainstorm solutions for what's going on that's disturbing you. But a lot of times if you're stressed, your adrenal gland overacts, and you have a whole cascade of hormones that go on.
Mm-hmm.
Dealing with the emotional thing is usually the best way first, as you do, like doing the exercise, the meditation, a lot of times that helps too.
Right.
But that would be the first thing that I recommend for most people, because most often the food cravings, I think it comes from within. And then there's the candida, the yeasty beasties, I like to call them. They are the ones that do make us crave a lot. And usually I find that a lot in people that crave, you know, the chips and refined carbohydrates and white bread. A lot of times I'll find they do actually show up with candida. And by treating that, their cravings decrease.
Right.
Some other people, too, it's related to blood sugar instability. And it's that they're not eating foods that keep their blood sugar stable for longer amounts of time.
Right.
And when you have that dip, you want to eat something sweet to bring your sugar up, but then it goes up and down like a roller coaster.
Right.
So by adding in extra protein to meals, or in between meals of snacks or healthy things like nuts or that sort of thing, that can help keep your blood sugar stable so that you don't crave as much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, if the blood sugar, because I know somebody who's like that, and, you know, is it, one of the things that I've always found that's very effective for weight loss for me is, you know, doing proper food combining.
Mm-hmm.
So adding the protein in isn't always the proper food combining.
Yeah. Food combining is great because it helps you to absorb what you're eating very well. Your body naturally has certain enzymes when those foods are combined that you don't have to use a lot of enzymes, and you'll be able to actually probably eat a little more if you food combine.
Right.
The problem is a lot of people with their diet, they don't eat protein except for once. Like they have a carb for breakfast, they'll have cereal, they'll have, I don't know,
toast,
whatever, a piece of bread for lunch, and then at dinner they might have some veggies and a salad and some protein. But when you have a starchy carb for breakfast and lunch, it makes your blood sugar spike a little bit, and you you'll have a drop in energy, and then you'll want to eat. And usually they'll want to reach for something sweet to bring the blood sugar up. And by putting a protein or healthy fats or nuts in between meals or with your meal, it will keep your blood sugar stable so you don't have that dip. But like if you're doing food combining, a lot of times people will eat enough protein, but it's usually the people that tend to eat all carbs most of the day, and then they think they're doing a good job by having their vegetables just at night. So
it's
I find a lot of people eat that way. It's like 75% starch, and the rest is veggies or proteins, which is not a good balance.
What is a good balance?
Well, if you can get in, well, ideally you want to get more than half of your daily intake as vegetables, which is tough for some people on the go.
Right.
I admit that. It's tough for some people. But to get that many fruits and veggies, you want to get over half of every meal fruits and veggies. A quarter of that can be proteins during the day, and a quarter, sorry, I'm having a brain fart. the
carbs.
Proteins and then the grains.
Yeah.
So it would be half fruits, veg, and then, of course, the oils and that would just be a side, you know, on what you're eating, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to get the healthy grains, the quarter protein, half veggies and fruits. And all the antioxidants in vegetables and fruits are, they're great for you. They prevent cancer and that sort of thing. But most people really eat like 75% grains when I have people do a diet diary, and they might want to lose weight or they have digestive issues. They just eat a lot of grains. So
right.
Cutting back, having the healthier grains a little less, it tends to help with weight and helps improve, you know, immune function and that sort of thing by cutting that down.
Right.
So.
Now, a lot of people have mold issues. So that would be not just dairy, but also nuts.
Yeah.
And I guess mushrooms.
Mushrooms, yeah. Yeah, the mold issue, a lot of times people that have sensitivities to mold are actually full of candida because that makes candida worse. They find their nose runs, they get sinus trouble. They'll even get worse when it's damp out, raining, or if you're in a damp basement, even in the library, they might find they have difficulty breathing. I have a lot of people who have mold sensitivities, and when you treat them for candida effectively, they don't suffer as much, or it stops altogether. But I find a lot of people have an underlying issue with that. So then if that was the case, you know, if they're sensitive to molds, I usually recommend that they steer clear of cheeses, wine, and nuts.
Right.
They're the biggest contributors to that mold. But, yeah, the candida thing, it's underlying in a lot of problems, actually.
And why do you think that is?
Well, it tends to cause a lot of other symptoms of different diseases. So like allergies are worse if you have candida, sinusitis, vaginitis, irritable bowel. It causes so many things because it's on a lot of the surfaces of our body, external and internal surfaces. So it tends to be diagnosed as different diseases when it's really just a yeast overgrowth, and a lot of problems can be helped just by treating the candida. A lot of doctors don't look at that. They usually only check for a vaginal yeast infection.
Right.
So medical doctors anyways. And once you treat that, a lot of the symptoms abate. But I think, too, with our diet and how we're rushing all the time, the way we eat has changed so much over the years. Like most people on the run will eat prepackaged things, things with a lot of starches and carbs. They might say low fat, but they're full of sugar, you know, that sort of thing. So eating on the run and eating a lot of starches, grains, and sugars, it feeds it. So I think it's a bit of an epidemic now with the way that we're eating.
Mm-hmm.
I actually, when I was in Florida last year, I was thrilled with their grocery store. They had such nice produce, and it was about this time of year. And I was with a friend who lives in Florida, and I don't know if you know this, but the Florida has a very high percentage of overweight and obese people. And I was looking around thinking, how can these people not be eating this? But they're going for what's cheap and what's fast, And it's so much cheaper to buy junk food than it is to buy fresh fruits and vegetables, even though they have an abundance of them there. So it's just amazing the way that people eat. They're on the run. They say it's too hot outside to exercise, that sort of thing. And
right.
It's like they just don't know what they have, this lovely cornucopia of beautiful food and nice sunshine and what they could do with it. But I think it's a cultural thing. It's a economic thing, and it's eating what's fast and cheap, and unfortunately that's really not good for our health.
Right.
Yeah.
Hmm. So those are cravings. So
yeah.
Is there any other cravings that we might have? The salt?
Salt. Yeah, a lot of people crave salt. Salt is a balancer. Sometimes people crave salt who actually have a deficient adrenal gland. The adrenal gland is a stress gland, and the adrenal sits on top of the kidney, which controls your salt water balance. Seems to be a nutrient that helps us retain water. A lot of people avoid salt because of blood pressure reasons. They think it's healthy. But sea salt, and if you drink enough water, I think it's fine for people. People with high blood pressure, they might not need that extra salt. But in general, people who crave salt, I believe that their adrenal gland usually is low. And there's certain tests that you can do, hormonal testing on people to see if that's the case. But often just listening to, you know, what they feel their stress levels like will be a reflection of, you know, adrenal function. People with a low adrenal gland, they also tend to be sluggish in the morning. They have a hard time getting going. They get more irritable than normal. And also after lunch, they'll have a big peak. They'll just feel like, oh, I ate, I feel good. And then about a half hour later, they're ready for a nap. So that's usually the trend you see with adrenal people. So if I see clients that might crave salt, I'll ask them questions. How are you in the morning? What do you like in the afternoon? What's your energy like? How do you respond to stressors? You know, do you feel like you might respond inappropriately? And those are the questions I ask, and usually that's the case. So when people are into salt, it's usually the adrenal. And, you know, sometimes salt brings out the flavors in foods if people don't add other spices to things.
Right.
So that's another issue. But oftentimes I find it's related to an adrenal condition. So.
Hmm. What do we do for stress?
Pardon me?
What do we do for stress?
For stress, well, exercising is great for stress. Also, journaling, I find, is great for people. As I mentioned before, journaling how you're feeling, solutions, making a list, a gratitude list. It helps decrease people's stress to take the focus off what they're stressing about. If, you know, those kind of emotional things don't help people, there's certain remedies that help really support the stress that's going on. If you start to get physiological changes, your blood pressure might start to rise, that sort of thing. B complex is very good. It's good for our nerves. It helps with energy, helps with our hormonal processes. Licorice tea is very good for the adrenals as well. Some people take herbs that are sedative herbs. I don't usually recommend sedative herbs as much, only for, you know, a short-term kind of thing for sleep, like passion flower, valerian, that sort of thing are good. And also finding your homeopathic constitutional remedy is very good.
Okay.
It helps ground people, make them feel more balanced within themselves. And a constitutional remedy would be suited to their physical and emotional needs. So it's matched more to the person than just trying to suppress a symptom.
Right.
So I find that's a good balancer for people.
Mm-hmm.
But I usually start with, you know, the emotional aspect of it first, try and rule out what's going on, do your internal work. And if people still need more support, if their adrenal's weak, go for the bees, licorice tea. There's even, it's called gemotherapy, Ribes nigrum. It's a black currant extract made from the buds. It's very good for adrenals. It's also great for allergies too. So we might recommend certain things like that. But each person, you know, that I see is different. There's not one catch-all thing that we do for everyone, but I think B-complex would be great for most people to take just to give them extra energy.
Right.
And it's safe. It's water-soluble, so if you get too much of it, it's just excreted anyways.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Allergies. There is a difference, obviously, between food sensitivities and allergies.
Yes.
And, you know, what tends to happen to our bodies? Like, why is it a problem?
The allergies?
Mm-hmm. So talk first about what the difference is so people know.
The difference? If you have a full-blown allergy to a food, you get an immune complex that's in your system. This immune complex causes a whole host of symptoms. The immune complex, like you can get that closing throat, you might need an EpiPen, that kind of thing, violently sick if you had a food allergy. Food sensitivities operate on a different plane. You don't get that allergy protein complex in your blood, but you can get other symptoms that happen. For example, some people get rashes, headaches, dull aches in their body, foggy thinking. So the sensitivities are less severe per se, but they can cause naggy symptoms. And they have a different type of immune system complex. I really believe that most allergies come from not having a balanced intestinal flora. This flora that we have, there's always good and bad bacteria in there. But if you don't have enough good bacteria, the bad bacteria can overgrow. And as I mentioned earlier, 60 to 80% of your immune system is actually found in your gut. So what happens is this imbalanced flora can irritate the lining of your gut, impede your immune system, and the cells that line the gut actually open a little bit, and different types of things that don't normally get into the bloodstream can, so they start causing all kinds of different symptoms. So having that healthy gut flora, I think that's key in treating allergies. Most people treat allergies by just suppressing the symptoms, but actually I think that by treating the gut, it's a more permanent way of healing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's probably the better way to go to improve your immune system from dysfunctioning, basically.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, there are a lot of foods that, you know, we don't seem to tolerate, even though we do want to ingest them.
Mm-hmm.
So like milk, or I mean, there are lots of alcohols as well that, you know, really it's a poison to our body, yet we, you know, seem to want to do it.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. You know, I believe, like, a lot of the things in moderation are fine. Like, having a glass of wine once in a while is fine. Eating certain foods once in a while is fine as well. But some of the things that we're taking now, like, for example, wheat has been genetically modified. So a lot of people can't tolerate wheat the way they used to be able to. And it's my understanding that in Europe they don't allow genetic modification of wheat. And I went away to Italy and I noticed I could get away with eating a lot of nice breads and things like that. And I thought, wow, this is great. Let me bring some of this home. But a lot of our stuff has been genetically modified, which might actually cause some problems with our reaction to it. So I think it's normal for people to want to eat, you know, different varieties of things, have a treat here and there. It's the quantity and the quality of what we do for the majority of the time that I think is the key.
Right.
And a lot of people, you know, don't pay attention to the quality and quantity of what they're eating. So it can be a big impact.
So organic.
Pardon?
So organic versus...
Yeah, I think organic is a good way to go. It is the pesticides and things. It's tricky, you know. I understand the argument that pesticides, they help feed third world countries. They prevent our food from being ravaged by insects. And to feed the world, sometimes maybe we do need pesticides. But if we had a choice, which we do now, I believe organic is probably the best way to eat. It just decreases our toxins that we're exposed to. A lot of pesticides, they're considered to be xenoestrogens, which is a negative type of estrogen that increases types of hormonal cancers, that sort of thing. So mm-hmm. it's probably best, you know, to reduce our exposure to pesticides if we can. It really does reduce our toxic exposure.
Right. And also, I guess when we're talking about animals, it would be, you know, not to have the antibiotics that they send.
Yeah. You know, I'm not sure if you have just watched this movie that came out called Food, Inc.
Yeah, I didn't, but I've heard about it.
Yes, it was really awful. what they feed our cows. I try and buy free-range, natural-fed meats as much as I can.
Mm-hmm.
We have a few places here where I live that I can get that sort of thing, but I try to stay away from the regular supermarket meats. It's, you know, they feed cows, for example, they're supposed to eat grass, and they're fed corn, and this corn creates antibiotic-resistant E. coli.
Mm.
And in this program, they said rather than feed them grass, because then they'd have to live in a field rather than be penned up, these cows, they spray the meat with ammonia. And I'm thinking, great, this is what we're eating.
Wow.
Thank goodness I don't eat that kind of meat, but for those who do eat that kind of meat, it's hard to find out where your food is coming from. But eating the, you know, the animals, eating those chickens and cows that are fed the diet they're supposed to be fed, it reduces our exposure to diseases as well. Like, look at mad cow disease that comes from cows eating other dead animals, which should not be happening.
No.
But unfortunately, I think that it's the mighty buck that's moving a lot of these farmers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that's kind of the problem, isn't it? I have a girlfriend who works at the Carrot, or the
yeah.
Big Carrot,
yeah.
And, you know, specifically, they have to be very regulated, and they have to know exactly where, you know, certain meats are coming from. And you know, there are a lot of the people out there that are saying that, you know, they're free range and naturally raised, and they can't verify with them, you know, that everything's being taken care of, so they can't use some of them. So it's a real interesting place that we're in right now, because,
yeah.
I mean, we're really trying to become more aware of what's happening, and it becomes a little bit difficult.
It does. But the one good thing that they mentioned from that show that I saw was it's consumers' choice that influences what happens in our world. So, for example, they're starting to get organics at Walmart in the States, which is, you know, they're not doing it for our health, but because the consumers want it. So the more the consumers go for these organic free range, then it in time it'll help us, you know, to make that the norm, reduce the cost, because a lot of people, you know, this time with the economy are worried about costs of things, trying to cut corners. But if we all start to move in that trend, that's what will happen.
Right.
Each of us can do it. So there was a positive thing about it, that show, and I really admire, you know, people that do buck trends and grow the organics and, you know, keep the animals the way they should be kept, because it's a lot more work.
Right.
It's, you know, it's so much better for us in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
There's so many different health problems that we can have, at least if we could control where our food comes from, what comes to our table, we could prevent a lot of diseases. So.
Right. What about the raw diet?
The raw diet?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a good diet for some people. I think it's difficult. Have you ever experienced it, or?
You know, I don't know necessarily. This is another question, but you know, I think the blood type diets. You know, when you know your blood, I'm an O, so
yeah.
I need meat to sort of ground me.
Right.
I think our climate doesn't really support a raw diet. But I mean, some of these people are, you know, they're saying, oh, I am a raw foodist. And, you know, there's the real strict ones that are completely vegan.
Yeah.
And then there's the ones that, you know, add in sushi. And then, you know, I've heard people that are eating, you know, beef and chicken raw.
Yeah.
So it's like, whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I know of a few people who do raw food diet and, very strict, and I think it's good partially, but I think to do it wholly, you miss out on some nutrition that you need. And for example, I had an older lady who was doing it so strictly. But for example, they won't even cook beans. So
right.
She said, "Well, I soak them, but it's really hard to digest." So unfortunately, she had a lot of painful gas and that sort of thing. So there's aspects of it that I think are great. I think it's great to have that alkaline foods, that good punch of nutrients. And then in some respects, I think, well, you know, some things should be cooked, like beans. How are you going to break down a crunchy raw bean? You know, things like that.
Yeah.
Raw meat, I know there is nutrition in raw meat, but we have a lot of bacteria that needs to be killed, so I'm not going to promote that, that's for sure. Most of the ones that I know, they're vegetarian, more vegetarian-based.
Yeah.
So they would need some extra vitamins and things to help support that diet. But I think if you could do even 50% raw a day, that'll make a huge impact on your health.
Right.
Because you get so many more nutrients out of fruits and vegetables that aren't cooked.
Right.
So.
Right. Okay, so you talk in your book a lot about detoxing. Tell us what the benefits would be.
Of detoxing?
Mm-hmm.
Well, in my book, I talk about detoxing the liver, intestinal tract, liver, gallbladder, intestinal tract, and kidneys. By doing a cleanse, it enables your organs to better excrete toxins from your body. Actually, Native Indians do a cleanse. Mm-hmm. Traditionally with their type of medicine, once every change of season. And I noticed that trend that people always get sick when the season changes. So that's usually a time that I would recommend as well, that people do some sort of a gentle cleanse to get toxins flushing from liver, gallbladder, kidney, intestinal tract. And people can do it through a diet if they want to, or they can take supplements that will help promote excretion of toxins, make more bile, and clean the intestinal tract.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's a good idea to do it once in a while, maybe four times a year, just to keep things going the way they should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about some of our New Year's resolutions. Usually that includes, well, it includes weight loss. A lot of people do want to improve their health. What do you recommend?
For weight loss?
Well, yeah. I mean, the big thing, of course, is that people put all of their New Year's resolutions, you know, on a list and, you know, it may be to join a gym. It may be, you know, they have all of these big dreams and usually it's carried over from last year and the year before and the year before.
Yeah.
And, you know, typically what happens is after the first 2 weeks in January that, you know, that list kind of disappears.
Yeah, that's right. Don't I know it, sister? I've been there myself. I'm sorry to say I've done it myself. The thing is with New Year's, you know, a lot of people want to lose weight, and you know what they say about the road to hell is paved with good intentions.
Yep.
But they don't have the resolve or the follow-through. And it's not something you have to do at New Year's, but a lot of people realize, well, I've gained, you know, an extra 10 pounds. I'd like to lose that weight. But they don't logically think of what they have to do to lose it. And that's when people become disinterested.
Mm.
And in my new book, actually, I have a whole section called You Have to Wrap Your Mind Around It. If you're not wrapping your mind around losing weight, you know, what it means to you, what are your barriers to lose weight, people don't proceed with their goals. Just by recognizing, like, for example, some people who've been heavy their whole life. They've been labeled as the chubby one. They see themselves as the chubby one, and until they can envision themselves not as the chubby one, they will stay the way they are. So there's a lot of there's a lot behind weight loss, a lot of emotional things that go on with it. You have to be able to feel and taste your goal and have the drive and know that you can achieve your goal. And a lot of people get down on themselves for making one mistake, but it's all planting seeds. So as people progress and plant seeds, they have to reward themselves along the way, tell themselves, I'm doing a good job. Every day I do this, I'm planting seeds so that I can become, you know, what I want to become. And this is not just with weight loss, but it's with, you know, with any goal, mm-hmm. anything in their life that holds them back. And there are some barriers for certain people with weight loss, physical, hormonal imbalances. Certain people have blood sugar instability. That tends to have people gain weight right around their mid-drift. People might have problems with stress, actually. We were talking about the adrenal gland. It raises your cortisol levels, and that makes you also gain weight around your midsection, increases your blood pressure. It gets you in that diabetic trend. So there's a lot of other areas that can be addressed to help enhance people's weight loss, but I think by making your goal, you have to feed your brain, feed your mind some positive things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't kick yourself because you one day ate a chocolate bar. A lot of people just give up, think, oh, I can't do it, I'm weak.
Yeah.
But
I have no willpower.
You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I find it to be a big, a lot of emotional issues there around weight.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a homeopath, how do you help people with their emotional issues?
I have a lot of printouts, for example, on how to wrap your mind around it. I give people information that they can work on themselves. And I usually try and prescribe homeopathic remedies suited to their constitution. As I mentioned before, that it sort of gives people more of a grounding influence. It doesn't change their personality. It makes people feel more grounded and better in their own body. So, you know, a lot of times when people are feeling unbalanced, they feel edgy, they're driven to want to, you know, eat something they shouldn't or do certain things that aren't good for themselves. But when you're feeling really good in yourself, grounded, you tend to be more balanced, more able to make rational decisions. So,
right.
Yeah, I usually recommend the homeopathic constitutional remedy, and that's based on what, you know, someone's individual needs.
Right. And then would you look at their goals to see realistically whether they can achieve them? Are they coming to you for guidance in that area as well? Because I know a lot of people, you know, they've decided that, you know, these 30 pounds that have, you know, grown over them over the last maybe couple of years,
yeah.
They've decided, you know, it's got to come off and it's got to come off by the end of the month.
Yeah, I do have people that have unrealistic goals of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Or people who don't need to lose another pound who think they do, which is hard.
Right.
In both of those instances, I would try the homeopathic constitutional remedy because there's something within them that's not nurturing themselves to expect that you're going to be able to drop 30 pounds in a month when some people want to. And realistically, healthy weight loss is 1 pound a week, 2 pounds a week, maybe tops. You want to lose it slowly, and they show that people who lose weight slowly over a longer period of time keep it off.
Mm-hmm.
It's the people who, you know, crash diet, then they fall off the wagon hard and eat everything they can because they haven't eaten enough to sustain themselves. So it's about accepting, you know, I am where I am, and this is what I am for now,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to plant seeds, as I said before, that every day I'm going to get better and better. But, I try and teach people a little bit. You know, some people don't want to be taught, and that's fine. But I think that when I tell them it resonates with them maybe after they've left, that that isn't realistic. And, you know, some places will promise crazy results, and it's just not achievable, and it's not maintainable. So, you know, people have to really wise up that with the weight loss. It's, you know, it took a while to gain this weight. It might take a while to lose it. But every step you take and every seed you plant leads to a better you in the future. So take your time and love yourself along the way. And that's a big thing, that people have to reward their efforts and realize, this is good. I'm doing this. This is great. You know, some people think, you know, I did this for 4 weeks and I've only lost 8 pounds. And think, well, that's really good. You know, even 5 pounds a month is great.
Mm-hmm.
But some people do have unrealistic goals, and, you know, it's what can you do? You try and educate people and hope that they'll wise up to what they really need to do.
Right.
Yeah.
So this constitutional remedy that you talk about, how do you determine what that is?
Well, usually when I see a client, I might spend an hour and a half to 2 hours for the first visit.
Mm-hmm.
And during that time, what I'll do is I'll ask questions about what their physical concerns are. I don't only see people with weight loss issues. I see all kinds of different cases, digestive, that sort of thing. So I'll ask them, you know, questions like, when did this start? What makes you feel better or worse? What kind of foods they crave, how well they sleep, what their stress levels like, and try and get a picture of what they're like as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
So these symptoms, what I do is take the unusual symptoms and try and match them to a homeopathic remedy. And homeopaths work a little differently in that they match your symptoms to a particular remedy, whereas a lot of other modalities, like with vitamins, you just take a vitamin for a particular issue.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no unique match for the person, but this unique match, it tends to help balance people on a physical and emotional level, and has a bit of a grounding influence on their personality. So each person that I see, I would try and get this different information from them that makes them different, and usually we would prescribe only on things that are a little bit abnormal, not normal things like, you know, I'm friendly, or, you know, for example, some people are afraid to be speaking in public. That's a symptom. Some people, if they have pain, they get irritable. They want to be left alone. And that would be a homeopathic remedy, like bryonia, for example. They're very cranky. They want to be left alone. They have aches and pains. Leave me alone. I'm going to go lie down. And then there's other people who have pain. They get nervous. They get restless. They can't stay still. They pace. They're over the top anxious. They think they're going to die. And then you might give them a remedy like metallum album. They have those symptoms. So each person that comes gets something that's more unique to their particular condition. And homeopathy is very gentle, safe. It can be given to babies, seniors, even pets. So I really like that form of medicine. That's usually my first choice, is a homeopathic remedy. And then we'll use supplements, things like that, for people.
Right.
Yeah.
And diet.
Diet, for sure. Diet. Yeah.
Yeah.
Can't leave that out. Not at New Year's. No.
Yes. Well, just, I mean, our food is our diet. I mean, it's whether we're dieting or just looking at our overall diet.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I find, yeah, that's the thing with weight loss, too, is that people consider it to be like diet as in punishment.
Yeah.
Not lifestyle modification. Which,
yeah,
I love it when people finally get it. Like, I finally get it. It's lifestyle modification. You can have a piece of cake once in a while. You could have a glass of wine. It's what you're doing the majority of time that counts. And if you have 21 meals a week and you screw one up, have your wine, eat cake for supper, you know, it's the 20 meals that counts. But it's the reverse. A lot of people eat one way, and then they flip to super strict. And, you know, when that light goes off that they realize it's lifestyle modification, you know, it's like, hallelujah, I've lost, you know, I have some people who tell me they've lost, I lost like 25 pounds, you know, over the past couple of years since I saw you. And I didn't think what I said to them even, you know, resonated with them, that they do what they're told, they get it. And it's just, it's fabulous. It's this quick fix mentality that we've come up with that tends to make people, you know, go one way with their diet, go the other way. But when they start eating better, they start feeling better, their health is great, and they can have the occasional treat. Mm-hmm. And they don't have to punish themselves. It's just great. Mm-hmm. Wish everyone was like that.
But we do have that mentality, unfortunately.
We do. And I know I have that mentality with a lot of things myself. You know, everybody's a work in progress.
Right.
So, you know, we have to work with ourselves and you know, work on ourselves and with ourselves so that we can better understand ourselves and make better choices that we need to make.
Right.
Yeah.
So if you were to say, what are some of the most common digestive problems that impact our society, I guess, you know, what would you say? I mean, we talked about candida.
Yeah.
I think our bowel movements probably is huge because it can go one way or the other.
That's right. I think the biggest thing is everybody has IBS, irritable bowel syndrome now.
Oh.
There's a lot of constipated people, many, many, many people with heartburn and acid reflux. Those are the big three. There's a lot of other issues, you know, with digestion too, like Crohn's and colitis, those autoimmune, and I'm seeing a lot more kids coming up with that, like 12-year-olds, they're coming up with it.
Is that, are they taking the genetics from their parents? Like, are they taking over their parents' karma type thing that they're having this, or what do you think?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I think that these kids, they have a personality profile. You know how they say the type A personality is the heart attack, the type B personality is laid back, and type C is the cancer. I find these kids, this is just a theory. Maybe I'll try and prove it later, but sometimes they're driven to be perfect in life and in school and in sports, and their parents tend to be parents who want their kids to be, you know, the Stepford kid or the perfect kid. But I do notice a trend with that, and it could be, and there's so many issues related to autoimmune diseases, but I tend to notice that the kids are very responsible kids. They tend to have a certain way about them that I wonder if it's a connection, you know, an emotional connection. And they say a lot of diseases, you know, stem from our emotions, that sort of thing, but it's hard to pinpoint it. But one day maybe I'll do a study to see if my, you know, my theory is correct. But a lot of children, it's very sad to be 13 and diagnosed with that, and some of them, like the doctors, will say, oh, it's okay, we'll just remove the lower part of your colon.
Or, oh.
Yeah, okay, no problem.
Right.
There are any 2-for-1 specials on that, you know. it's quite serious. But I find that most people come up with, you know, the irritable bowel, constipation, heartburn, and I really believe it has a lot to do with how much beneficial bacteria we have, and of course what we're eating, what we put in our body. If we have too much bad bacteria, not enough good, that affects all areas of our digestion. So that's the key for most people.
And what is the recommendation for irritable bowel syndrome?
Irritable bowel, it's a number of things. Usually I would check someone's flora to see if they have enough good bacteria, and what their bad bacteria is like if they have an overgrowth. That's the ideal thing to do. Fish oil is actually very good for irritable bowel. It decreases inflammation. It helps heal the gut. Probiotics, the good flora, if you can get high-quality probiotic with Acidophilus and Bifidobacteria, that improves your good bacteria and decreases your bad bacteria. That's usually what I would start with. And then, depending on the case, I might add different things in. Like, if they come up with a certain type of bad bacteria, I might give them some kind of an antifungal or antimicrobial of some sort, change their diet. Usually I would ask that people cut back on sugars and move to more whole grains and reduce the quantity of grains, because a lot of people eat too many grains.
Mm-hmm.
So, sometimes stress is a factor as well with the irritable bowel, and we might work on that. But everybody's an individual. Like, I spend at least an hour and a half to 2 hours with each new person, so I really get to know them in that first couple hours so that I can pinpoint, you know, what they need,
right,
what should happen. So,
what about, and I think there are a lot of people that get the dry, itchy, maybe looking like psoriasis type skin in the winter. I mean, that's not so big in warmer climates, but I think it seems to be bigger here.
Yeah, the dry, itchy skin?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is predominant. A couple of things. Well, you know, being indoors, it is drier in our homes, but usually if you have enough essential fatty acids, GLA in particular, gamma-linolenic acid, it's from borage oil. It is really good for skin. Helps with eczema, dry skin, itchy skin, that sort of thing. And also, our water. A lot of times when it's cooler out, we use hotter water, and our water is chlorinated. So when we heat up our pores, the pores open, and we get all this chlorine slathered all over and absorbed into our skin. So actually, reducing the temperature of the water that you bathe in can help quite a bit with improving how dry your skin is.
Really?
Yeah, it dries it right out, because there's chemicals in our water. So you want to use a little bit cooler temperature to bathe with, and maybe use a more gentle soap, like a Castile soap. Or there's a really nice soap. What's it called? Sea buckthorn oil soap. It's very nice, very soothing. It's great for dry skin. And by taking extra borage oil, it's very good. It helps nourish your skin from the inside out.
Cool. Well, it's been a great pleasure talking with you. This has been, you know, very informative. Is there anything else that you would recommend for anybody on their New Year's resolutions?
New Year's resolution. Wrap your mind around it. That's my biggest recommendation, is if you really want it, you have to wrap your mind around it. So do your work, know you're planting seeds, and go for it if that's what you really want.
Okay. Well, and you have a new book coming out in February, or around the beginning of this new year.
Yeah.
And it's, what's it called?
I'm thinking it's going to be called Your Drug-Free Guide to Healthy Weight Loss.
Nice.
And it includes dietary recommendations, how you can wrap your mind around it, also other barriers to weight loss, like having imbalanced blood sugar, hormonal imbalance, stress, thyroid disorder. So it's quite a good book, good references, so you can rule out, you know, your underlying cause if there is any. But I'm excited for it to come out.
Mm-hmm. And how can people get a hold of you?
Actually, they can go to my website, www.caruso, C-A-R-U-S-O, homeopathy.com. They can read more about me, and we have articles online available, that sort of thing, and my contact information is on there as well.
Great.
All right.
So, Heather, it's been really, really lovely talking with you, and when your new book comes out, I probably won't be able to talk to you till the summer, but, you know, it might be a good summer, end of summer type, or beginning of summer interview. That to get people motivated to putting on those bathing suits.
Get their Speedos on.
All right. Well, it's been a great pleasure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. Have a great New Year's.
You too.
Okay. Bye now.
Bye.